everybody, and welcome to podcast number 83. Today I have with me someone who I have known for years and without whom never have got into comedy myself. He's undoubtedly one of the best MCs in the country, seen at Comedy Store, Glee's, Comedians, Off the Curb, and of course, Outside the Box. His guests have included Jimmy Carr, Frank Skinner, Stephen Merchant, Bill Bailey, Lee Mack, Sean Locke, Russell Brand, Rich Hall, Dara O'Brien, Andy Parsons, Joe Brand, Robin Ince, Tim Vine, Russell Kane. Is there anyone he hasn't seen? Include Russell Howard, Lenny Henry, and the late Robin Williams. I'm going to stop now, otherwise this is going to be hours of me just going through how wonderful he is and what brilliant people he's brought to our stage. And go and chat to the one and only Math Brown. Welcome, Math. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Elaine. It's had a lot of work's been done. I didn't even realise all those people have done it, but of course they have, yeah.
They have, yeah. You've been around a long time with some incredible people, without you, we would never have seen. Now, you actually went to the Matthew Arnold School before going on to study at John Moores University in Liverpool. But it was actually during high school you started playing football, which remains one of your passions, where you were recognised and chosen to play right back and central midfielder for Brentford Football Club. You were living every boy's dream. Tell us what actually happened.
Yeah, that's very true. I've always been very single-minded right from a very early age, and I just knew I wanted to be a professional footballer. So that, you know, that's basically what I aimed for. And to be honest with you, I probably peaked when I was 15, but you know, that's just the way it is sometimes in the game. But yeah, I mean, it was an amazing time, and I've still got a poster up on the wall of the time when I was playing for Brentford. And it feels like, I mean, it says 1991, 92 on it, which just seems absolute years and years and years, decades ago, of course. But yeah, it's remained very much my passion. I stopped playing when I was about 24. I went to university. I played for the university, but I stopped playing at a high level. And then, yeah, basically when I sort of left university, I went into a job which was the coaching side of it and also analysis at Liverpool Football Club. So I worked for part of Gerard Houllier's backroom staff at Liverpool. And then I went to manage in Singapore, which is called their S League. That's their equivalent of the Premier League, but it's probably about the same level as sort of maybe League Two here. Yeah, I did that for a year. And then like all managers got sacked and then they paid me off the rest of the contract. So it meant that when I came home, I didn't have to get a job straight, which meant I could then follow my next passion, which was comedy. I knew quite early on I always wanted to be a comedian. When football, every time I was doing coaching, I always put humour into it. So I was kind of used to speaking in front of an audience, but this is a completely different level, as you know. You know, when you all of a sudden you've got to go up with just you and a microphone and people waiting to see if you're funny or not, it's a very different pressure. And yeah, so that's basically what happened when I turned 13. We're now 47, so 17 years into it.
Fantastic. And it was actually in May 2005 you completed the Amuse Moose stand-up course run by fellow comedian Logan Murray. Began performing in November 2005, but it was actually the day after you finished the course, you knew you actually wanted to set up a comedy club.
Well, I set it up whilst we were doing the course. So again, I used to love going, before I became a comedian, I used to love going to comedy clubs. That was my thing. It was always a passion to go and watch comedy as much as I possibly could. And when I was living in Liverpool, there wasn't much of an opportunity because there was literally only one comedy club in Liverpool. They pretty much used the same acts virtually every week. So it got quite boring quite quickly. But I just took little bits and pieces. So I used to go to the Comedy Store in Manchester as well. And I took little bits and pieces of how I would run a comedy club and then realised halfway through doing the course, there wasn't much opportunities to get on stage, especially as a new comedian or what we call an open spot. And I knew I wanted to make this a job. So again, I looked at it from sort of an analytical point of view. And I decided that by starting up my own club, I could have stage times I wanted every Monday and nobody could tell me I can't do that. So you can't not book yourself. So that was the idea behind it. And it sort of just steamrolled really quickly into something that I didn't realise I'd created. So after 3 months, I mean, we found a perfect room for it for a start, which is there's a lot of science to comedy, believe it or not. And the Fighting Cocks, which is a music venue, which is where we do our Monday night club on Kingston, is virtually perfect for it. It's a dark, grotty room. It's a little secret place. It's probably the worst place in the world for COVID now, but that's, you know, that's the way. And after 3 months of running it, it became quite a hit. And then so there's a massive agent called Avalon. They had to come down with a few of their acts, and then they decided that it was a perfect place for Frank Skinner to come. So Frank Skinner was the first massive name that we had, and he came and did 9 weeks in a row, and it just put the put the gig on the map straight away. So that side of London, it meant basically big names didn't have to go into central London on a Monday night to try out the new material. So then at that side of London, there's loads of comedians, famous comedians that live around that way. Lee Mack, Andy Parsons, Milton Jones, John Richardson, Russell Howard was around that way for a bit. And it became quite famous for famous people just dropping in and doing stuff. And it's unfortunately, that's kind of been the victim of its own success. So what happened after about 3 or 4 years of just doing the Monday night in Kingston, we then started getting approached from other places. So then we went over to Seven Oaks as well. And then Surbiton came along, and then New Malden came along, and then Hampton Hill came along. And it wasn't the plan at all. It was all just by accident, really. And then I got so much enjoyment by putting them on, you know, and like you say, in the kind words that you were saying at the beginning there, I don't really realise that it's touched a lot of people's lives, especially during lockdown when we were doing Zoom gigs, which are really horrible to do. They're hard work and it's just difficult. It's a difficult form of comedy, but it was keeping us going. It was keeping us afloat, and it was also keeping the comedians in work and the audiences alive and keeping the brand alive. But then what happened is when we were allowed out, we went back into beer gardens. A lot of people came up to me and, you know, and was very grateful and very touching, you know, that they would come up and want to say, look, without you, we wouldn't have got through that so much. And I'm not blowing smoke up my own arse. It's just, you don't realise what you're doing at the time. And in all honesty, all I was doing was trying to stay alive, because I didn't get any funding at all from the government. I didn't qualify for anything whatsoever. So I literally had no income for 7 or 8 months until we created the Zoom gigs. And what was brilliant was how much people supported them. You know, I couldn't believe people were willing to just, you know, let us back into their lives and into their front rooms as well. It's a very different, very different medium. But people were bored with telly, people were bored with Netflix, people were bored with, you know, not having interaction and laughing. So it became quite a success as well. Hopefully we never have to do them again.
That's right. Yeah. But after 3 months of the Fighting Cocks, you actually won the prestigious Best Comedy Club Award after 3 months, which just goes to show how huge you went. You travelled extensively doing comedy yourself, as well as running the clubs. But you took yourself off to New York City to try at the comedy clubs So tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, that was really early on in my career, and I wasn't really, I mean, I was so hungry to be a comedian. I loved New York. It's just one of those places that I'm totally in love with. And I was really in love with a comedy club there called the Comedy Cellar. And I just wanted to do that. I wanted to go and do it. But that's a bit like saying, I want to go and play the Comedy Store. You know, you just can't do that. You have to work your way up. So when I went over to New York, it was just through other comics that I'd known that had come over to the UK. So then I met up with them and did a few gigs over there. Not massive ones, but they were still very similar to the Fighting Cocks, you know.
But you went
and it was
from
a different...
Didn't you go from one floor to the next floor on one of the venues?
Yeah. So basically there were three rooms in one building, and I did two of them, and they were both very, very different. And the one below was like an open spot venue with only like 15 people in it, and 13 of them were comedians. And then the next one was the full size room, which was like 200 people. And I was on with Jim Finnegan, who was just getting famous then. And because obviously I had an English accent, I was a bit unique to them. I had to slow down because they couldn't understand me. And also some of the references didn't work. But then what I found is if I talked about my view of New York, they'd tend to really like that. So a lot of stuff was sort of written whilst I was there, you know. So but it was fun. I mean, it was one of those things that I always wanted to do. And I'd love to go back and do it again. And now, you know, I am a fairly established professional comedian and just done Mock the Week. Hopefully I can go and have a go at the Comedy Cellar now.
Brilliant, brilliant. So, because it was actually on the 4th of December you got onto Mock the Week, because I know that you write a lot of jokes for other comedians and you actually work there. You are an MC doing the warm-up act behind Mock the Week. So it must have been like, oh, thank God for COVID. Angela Barnes has gone sick. I'm here. I'm on.
Yeah, well, it was, like you say, I've been involved with that show for nearly 10 years, probably more than 10 years. I used to write for one of the regulars who used to come down to Kingston to try out the jokes. And then that was just purely me adding a few jokes to them when them come off. And then they said, OK, do you want to write for me? And so I've been writing for the show for at least 10 years. And then I've done the warm up for about 4. And they've always said to me, you know, just prepare as if you're going to go on each show. You lose a lot of drive for that because you're doing a lot of work and for no recognition, no extra money. But the point being is that having had all that time to prepare and having all those years of writing and working on the show, that when I did get the opportunity, you know, I was going to take it. And I had 20 minutes, 25 minutes notice. I was in the dressing room next to Angela, and I heard Angela say to one of the runners, can you go and get the medic? I'm feeling a bit warm. And I just thought, that won't happen. And then, they took her out of the building to try and cool her down, and then they wouldn't let her back in just in case because they didn't know what it was. And luckily, touch wood, it wasn't COVID anyway. But yeah, so I had 20 minutes, 25 minutes notice to go on the show when most people get 2 to 3 months. Yeah. So all of a sudden, it was deep end stuff. And luckily, like I say, I've been writing for the show for so long, I know the format.
Yeah.
I know, what under the scenes, for example, that's kind of what I do as a comedian. I write short jokes like that. Mm. So it fitted my style. And I was lucky enough to do stand up on it as well. So that's definitely guaranteed 2 to 3 minutes of making the edit. And it all came together.
Great. Miss, have you got anything you want to say to Maff?
Yeah, one of the funniest nights I've ever had in my life, and for Elaine. It was a June, hot summer's day. The night was sweaty. You came out, and they'd walked in with a Sainsbury's sandwich bag, an umbrella, and I think it was a flask in their little orange Sainsbury's bag. As they were sitting down, as they were late coming in, right in front of you, you just said to them, "Oh, you've arrived." Yeah, that was good. And you said, "Your sandwich is in the bag." And the next 5 minutes, because they showed you the sandwiches in the back at the front, it was so funny. And the fact you turned to the room and said, "Right, that's it. Look, I'm in control here." But were you really speechless, or was that just a masterclass in emceeing using the actual audience energy?
Well, one, I don't remember it at all.
Yeah.
So, because it's when you are emceeing and you're doing a lot of stuff off the cuff, it is in the moment stuff. It's not planned. It's just, you're just doing what you're doing and you're reacting to it. And you tend to get led by the audience. So if the audience were enjoying that, then, you let them enjoy that and keep them in the game. What probably happened by the sounds of it is I was starting to lose control of the people I was talking to. So that's when I stopped talking to them, because then you've got to take the authority back, and they might have got 2 or 3 laughs from saying something back, and you give them that. That's their moment as well. You don't want to be mean to anybody for the sake of it. But then you said that I then started talking to the back. That would have been a tactical move. That would have been taking the distraction away and then taking it somewhere else and see if you can get something else out of that. And even if it doesn't, like you say, it just calms the situation down. So, yeah, that's what would have happened, yeah.
So what impact did Logan have on you?
Well, Logan was sort of my gateway to comedy, if you like. He wants to start somewhere, and I found that course, which amused Moose Absolute Beginners, I think it was called. I don't think he works with them anymore, but he still runs courses, and if you're thinking about doing it, then do look him up. Logan Murray is superb. And Logan, you've done a course, haven't you, Elaine?
Yeah, I wrote to you, and I said, I'm thinking of doing a comedy course. Who do you recommend? Yeah. You said, well, I did this course, and I went and did it. I wouldn't have got into comedy because you were the person who said, go and see Logan.
He gave me the confidence and he gave me a support network. So there was 20 people on our course, I think maybe 10 at the end. We did it for 8 weeks, every Saturday for 8 weeks. And still from that course, Julian Dean is gigging, Ginger and Black, Ari was on it, Caroline maybe was on it, and myself. So, there's 4 comedians that are still professional now from 17 years ago from being that course. And if you look at the graduates from that course, there's some huge comedy names: Jack Whitehall, Greg Davis, Rod Gilbert, Russell Howard might have done it. But it just gives you that. It was just fun, like you say. It was just mucking about and it was fun. And then at the end of the course, end of the 8 weeks, everyone do the 5-minute set. And that changed my life, really, because that was what I went, oh, my God, this is exactly what I want to do. I did that on a Sunday, I think it was Sunday the 24th of November 2005, and then on the next day, the Monday the 25th, that's when the very first Outside the Box started.
Wow. Which do you prefer, being an MC or a comedian, part of a show as a performance in a show performer, or writing?
Doing a set is what you mean by there. So the MCs... MC is the one that will talk to the audience and set up the room, but also they do material. You just don't notice it's being done because you're just weaving it in and out. But I prefer now to just do the 20 minute sets. I've done Edinburgh 8 times, 8 Edinburgh shows, and that's not what I'm good at, if I'm being honest with you. I don't think I can do an hour stand up. I get bored of my own voice, let alone what they're thinking. I did I did it different ways. You know, I did a sketch show one year. I did a true story show about the family. So it's a good skill to have. But if my favourite thing is to just go in, do 20 minutes and go home.
And what's it like seeing your work on the big screen?
Initially, it's a real rush. Initially, when I first started getting jokes on Mock the Week, it was a real rush, and you're very proud of yourself, and you sort of validation to say, oh yeah, you can do it. That quickly turns into jealousy, because so now you're going, well, I want to say them on the telly because I wrote them, let me have a go. It's, you know, to this day I still enjoy it. I like hearing my words making people laugh. It doesn't really matter, you know, whether they come out of my mouth or somebody else's. And what is good is that other comedians can see that it's you've written it. There's a guy called Steve Hall, who We Are Clang, and works closely with Russell Howard. And he phoned me up the next day and just said, you wrote that one and that one, didn't you? And I went, yeah, I did. So it's nice when you get recognised because they're your style of jokes. And it'd be, yeah, it's like I say, it's you want to do it yourself on the telly. It's more frustrating otherwise, but I'll take it with the work where I can get it at the moment.
What is your top three performances that you've done, would you say?
Well, the ones I remember the most stick in your head, I suppose. There's I supported Greg Davis on tour, and it was Cardiff St David's Hall, and I think that's like 3,500 people. And when you look up, you just keep looking up and keep looking up, and there's just people, more people, more people. And yeah, I absolutely smashed it. It was definitely one of the best gigs I've ever had. I mean, certainly on a high from that. And it's a different, again, it's a different skill playing to 3,000 people as opposed to playing to 300. You have to wait a lot longer. You have to wait for the laugh to come back a lot longer, and it goes around the room a bit more. Normally what would be a 20-minute set was probably 10 minutes, but it was just perfect. Just everything hit perfectly. Next one was one at Top Secret, which is a lovely little comedy club in Covent Garden. And but I'd say it's probably one of the best in London now. And they're quite generous with me. They let me sort of drop in and do 10 minutes new stuff or whatever we'll do. And one of them, I've been doing this joke for a while, and I just didn't see it, and I actually made a mistake with a joke, and it made it 10 times better, you know. And that's on my Facebook if you want to have a look at it, that actual clip. So that was being free. The point of making there is that I was free enough to just muck about and not have the pressure on me to, you know, to absolutely smash it. You go to some gigs and they're really strict, your best stuff only, and if you don't do your best stuff only, you're not coming back. And that's, so it's, I think people have lost a little bit of sight of that. To get better at it, you've got to muck about. And third one will definitely be the most memorable gig ever in my entire life. It was when Robin Williams played in Kingston. So again, we're talking about his little 70, 60-seater pub gig. And the day was incredible. I was supposed to be in New York. Me and my girlfriend at the time were supposed to be in New York until the following Tuesday. We decided to come back on a Sunday because it wasn't going to be something I wanted to miss. The bill was phenomenal on the day. So I was comparing. Zoe Lyons opened. The middle section was Omidyarlilhe did 10, Al Murray did 25 minutes, and then Robin Williams. Okay. And then a break, and I can't remember who closed it, but basically they had to follow Robin Williams, which is ridiculous. And it was one of those things. So Al Murray was, let's say, was on just before Robin, and Al Murray said to the audience, you're going to remember this day for the rest of your life. And I remember standing at the side of the stage going, no, don't, that's my thunder, don't steal my thunder. And then he went, because you've seen me. And then he went off. And then I went on and I said, okay, we've got one more act in this section. Now, please be kind to him. He's American. He hasn't done stand-up for a while. He's just trying some bits out. Please welcome Robin Williams. And the audience didn't believe me. You know, they sort of went, yeah, okay, like little claps. And then Robin Williams came out and they went absolutely crazy. Never heard a noise like it. It was really, really piercing, you know, and people were standing up and clapping him before he'd done anything. And one bloke was so excited, he just kept on shouting Jumanji at him. Yeah, and then Robin did 15 minutes, was absolutely brilliant, gave me a cuddle afterwards on stage, said thanks very much. And then I saw him the next day on the Graham Norton show, because he was doing the Graham Norton show, and I was working on a different TV show, so I saw him in the corridor. And he said, hello, Matt, how are you? And he's like, wow, that's just mental. Yeah, that was just crazy. And it ended up, they heard a story about Robin turning up to Kingston, and they wanted, so we sat in the front row, and then we were part of the Graham Norton show a little bit. It didn't make the edit as much as I thought. But that was quite an amazing time.
One of the things that we notice amongst a lot of new comedians, Matt, is that they seem to think, don't worry about 5 minutes, the tight 5 minutes or the tight 10. How important is it?
Well, it depends if you want to progress. So learning to tighten up the set is quite a vital skill to have. And if you're, say, for example, you're coming to my gig in Kingston, I've not seen you before, and you've got 10 minutes. And if you decide to use 10 minutes to try out new material, I've got no problem with that. If you want to use that 10 minutes to show me your best 10 minutes you've got with a view to getting booked to get some paid gigs, it's vital. So that's your decision on how you use it. I never put any pressure on anybody to do whatever they want to do. You know, it's entirely up to them. I've never, ever told anybody to do what they do what to do on stage. It's not my, that's not how I think it should be done. But it's also that skill is, because when you go into a weekend club, if you haven't got an incredibly tight 20 at the Glee in Birmingham, for example, or the Comedy Store in London, or in Top Secret, you know, then you won't get rebooked. And it's, you won't get a second chance for a long time. If you get, if you balls a gig up, it could be 2 to 3 years before they have another look at you again. And also these gigs, a Comedy Store books up, you know, a year in advance. So if I was to talk to Simon at the Comedy Store today, so he can put some gigs in, he said, yeah, it would be December 2022. So, you know, patience is key, but you've got to be ready for when you get the opportunity. So it is vital in terms of getting up the ladder, yeah.
No, Matt, thank you very much for that insight. And I'll hand you back to Elaine.
Okay.
Now, you are known all over South London and beyond. Without a doubt, and you've got clubs running down here, but you've actually expanded. You've got clubs up north as well. You're taking over the country. So how do people see you up north?
Well, kind of and kind of not really. Basically, there's a gig in Stockport, which is my best mate's. And so he wanted to start a gig up here, which is where I've now moved to. And he, I said to him, instead of starting from scratch, just use our website and use our branding. So he runs Outside the Box Comedy Club Stockport as a separate entity. Having said that, I'm trying to start one in Glossop. So it's just one of those things that, you know, when you see a nice space, you want to put some, you know, put some comedy into it. It was never really the aim. It just, it all happened. We've got a really nice theatre in Sonning Mill, which is near Reading as well. And we tried to start one in Birmingham, a theatre in Birmingham. It's just wherever people want to see it, really.
Yeah. No, but you're doing a brilliant job. And like you said, throughout, you know, you were out as soon as you could throughout the pandemic, back in the garden in New Malden, huge names again with you. Everyone's behind you. And the people just love you here. You can't go anywhere with outside the box, yeah. And it is, it's true, you have brought a lot to the area. So how can people follow you, Math?
Yeah, well, it's mainly Instagram these days. I'm still on Twitter and Facebook, but mainly Instagram. It's just at Math Brown, 2 F's. And it's, you know, I quite enjoy the stories on there. And any upcoming gigs that I want to promote will be on there as well. Or if they want to follow the comedy clubs, it's at OTB Comedy.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, and thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you. Bye. This has been a podcast recording for Whole Lotta Comedy.